Okay, so last time
Alex actually told us how to calculate correlation functions using ADS-CFT. So first he told us that how correlation functions in ADS are related, or the path integrals in ADS is related to the path integrals in CFT, and then he wrote down the generating functional for CFT in terms of the ADS action. Which is equal to log of okay. And then he discussed massless and massive scalars, and then he calculated the two-point functions using the Witten trick. So he used Green's function method in some sense, and using that he found the two-point function for the operator, which is dual to the scalar field, which was some sense. Okay, and then he discussed some issues like how the solution, or that was part of the discussion, how the solution for the scalar scales near the boundary in terms of the radial direction. And now I'm going to repeat most of the stuff, particularly this stuff, but using slightly different idea and a simpler idea that we can simply use a Fourier transform in some sense to calculate two-point functions. And this trick or calculation is more versatile in the sense that we cannot use the Witten trick in cases where we have a black hole in the ADS. So today what I'll do is I'll calculate two-point function in momentum space, and we'll see the, how we recover the precise scaling behavior for the operators on the CFT side. And then we will discuss briefly what are the allowed scaling behaviors for the solutions near the boundary. This was discussed by Alex towards the end, where he explained how exactly, okay, what are the BF bounds, etc., how they control the scaling behavior. So to start with, I'll start with first. And I'll recall that we have the metric d square over dz square plus u okay, so all of my calculations are going to be the case where I have Euclidean geometry. So boundary is Euclidean, and the notation is I'll use capital A and B for the metric for the ADS, and mu nu will represent the metric on the boundary, which is flat. And for this case, the action for the massive scalar will be okay, I am going to skip some steps, and okay, here what I have done is I took the original action and integrated by parts and put this is the part which is equation of motion, and these are the boundary terms. I hope everybody is happy with that, because we did discuss it in last lecture. And this is my okay, so D is the dimension of the CFD. Yes.
Have some induced metric like gamma or H, not
yep.
G. Okay.
So yeah, you can call it gamma, but my, okay, I left it as G because okay, the boundary will have all kind of terms, but
okay,
the field
so
is going to go to zero for let's say X going to infinity, etc.
Well,
so
you just called you,
yeah,
the whole idea space. You also had J A B.
G A B, yeah.
I think the point is that your bulk metric and your boundary metric are both called G right now.
Yeah.
You have a G mu nu and a G A B.
Oh yeah. Okay, so you. Okay, I thought changing the mu nu will be good enough, but. It's good.
Done it.
Cool. Yes.
But that's not what you mean, is it? It's not the square root of eta mu nu. Because there's lots of one over, I think you were just telling us there's what lots of.
Yeah, so it's not precisely eta here.
Right.
So okay. I would prefer to keep G here.
Like a subscript to show us that it's a value.
Okay. So I
yeah,
put this one, but I wanted to keep it general. For example, okay, I'll come to that. And this is. D plus one dimensional box. So one by one. So this term will mean right, box phi will be. Okay, did I put my square root of G there? Okay, square root of G is here inside it.
You can write it there for
us. Yeah. I have.
Sorry.
Yes.
I guess the question is on the boundary term, in the boundary term, is it the square root of n mu nu that you wrote, or is it the square root of L squared over Z squared times n mu? You've got the factor L squared over Z squared in your metric?
Yes.
So is that included in there?
They are here. And
okay. Maybe this is hammering at something that, but in that particular one, in that particular square root, there are only d factors of L over Z. In that one, there are d plus one. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
That is
no,
great.
That's fine.
You just integrated by parts, so I don't see why the two factors.
Okay, so the idea is that there will be one factor
oh, right,
right here.
The normal vector.
Yes.
Same
so
last
this,
time.
This piece actually have one of the Z and there is D plus one here will cancel. I was about to write this normal vector. So normal vector will be okay. Oh, okay. So now, we learned last time that from there, the equation of motion for okay. phi is this one, and the idea is to find the solution for that, insert back in the action, and then using the idea that W is equal to, or the generating functional is phi naught equal to S phi naught, we'll find the expectation value by x and okay. So phi naught is the value of the field at the boundary. So there we have some value at phi naught x, and this source is the solution, and we have the solution everywhere in the bulk. And we take derivative with respect to this phi naught at the boundary and find the correlation functions. Okay. So first of all, we need to solve the equation of motion. And what we do is we take the Fourier transform for phi, and okay, here there should be some confusion terms we need to take care. Okay, I'm going to explain everything. So first of all, the way this solution is, or the expression is written, is I'm normalizing my fk to be 1 at, okay. So my UV cutoff or IR cutoff for the ADS is z is equal to phi, and the solution is normalized such that this is equal to 1. Okay, and all the scaling behavior is taken into this piece for which I have, okay, phi naught, I'll call it bar or renormalized piece, which is the value of the phi naught at the boundary. And k dot x is, okay, this is crucial. Here, the metric which is contracting x and k is not that metric. It is the metric at the boundary. So there are no z factor involved here. Okay, so k dot x is equal to. So the idea is to keep the translation invariance at the boundary. And that's why this is a form of Fourier transform actually we are choosing. And okay, this is the value of phi naught at the cutoff z is equal to phi epsilon. Okay. I think there should be questions.
Yep. Can you get correlation functions with any number of operators? Because it's, if your W is equal to your action, well, does that mean you've got a series?
You need
of
to have the terms. For example, if you have like, if you calculate third, let's say you want to calculate OOO, you need to have the terms which will actually source. Correlation. So in the action, you need to have phi cube term, I guess. So if you don't have that for them, what phi?
So I think the answer is yes, and we'll hear more about that on Thursday or maybe Monday.
everybody is happy with that expression, right? Okay. Now, the idea is that we take this form of solution and plug in into the equation of motion there, and we find
the self-dependent full factorize the dependence on set in
Z.
How
do yeah. So I don't know, but the idea is that we want to keep the translation invariance on the boundary, and we start from there.
But why don't you do the Fourier transform in the V space, but without the factorizing the set apart?
Yeah, I don't precisely know, but maybe we want to record the correct scaling behavior.
But alternatively, you just have the equation. You've basically shown us that the separation of variables is going to work, because he didn't make any approximation.
Okay,
there.
Sure.
Okay, so last time when Alex was doing this thing, he actually, up to the same step, process was same, but the point is that if we want to see what should be the behavior near the boundary, we can easily make an insert that sum z is for del. We insert it here, and these two terms are going to be of higher order. This will be next to the higher order, and we will recover the scaling behavior from this. Okay. So therefore we got delta plus minus. But now what we can do is this complete expression can be solved, and we need to use the Bessel functions. Okay. So I'm working with the case where we have Euclidean metric on the boundary, so my k is real. There are some issues with the for the case where we do the weak rotation and go back to the real time, but I don't think I'll have time to discuss today. But the main idea is that that scheme can be expanded in it. Once we found the solution, we can need to take care of some things, but we can take the solution to the real time. I guess that is only for some restricted cases, right? Translating the results to the real time correlations, right? Or
I agree, you have to be careful and get it right. Is that what all you were saying?
But can we just take the result from here and do the weak rotation, and will we get the right correlations all the time?
Well, I think you have to be careful with what boundary condition or what's setting the boundary condition in the interior. But if it's just ADF, I'm not sure that you run into problems.
But aren't there an advanced green function and a retarded green function so these will be different ways? So because you can, depending what you're interested in studying, you have more than one prescription,
right?
Right.
Okay, so general solution for this case, choosing one particular basis of Bessel function, we can write it as k nu and I nu are called hyperbolic Bessel function of first and second kind, and nu is given by delta plus minus t by 2. Okay, I haven't written somewhere delta plus minus AR. Now we have two independent variables, ak and ai, and to fix that we use regularity in the bulk. Okay, so the idea is that when z goes to infinity, which is the Poincaré, in some sense Poincaré horizon, although we don't have Poincaré patch now, one of the k nu goes e raised to power minus kz, and the solution goes like this kz. So from there we actually discard one of the piece and we are left with only this part of the solution. Yes.
We were not all Euclidean. We pick up a factor by somewhere, presumably in like the k squared, maybe minus k squared.
Yep.
And that gives us completely different solutions, doesn't it? Wouldn't it give us ikzs, which are the regular Bessel functions we're familiar with?
I think k becomes imaginary.
Yeah. So, like these.
No, the solution will work, but the only problem will be.
Yeah, those become like the good old fashioned Bessel functions.
Yeah, so k will become imaginary, and this piece will give two different solutions.
And they're oscillatory, but they all be, like
they all will give us a smooth geometry inside
that's
the
it. So
yeah.
So this argument actually works though. For some, like, I guess this is
okay,
what you were talking about.
This point
about.
Is not
clear
to
be
me.
Careful.
Yeah, but.
Well, it's, you know, if you calculate, and you, if I was in the CFT and I calculated correlators and then Wick rotated, I would think of them as, well, you're also in the vacuum. You would think of those as, you know, time-ordered correlators in the vacuum, but there are other correlators that you might be interested in. In particular, in this, something we might be interested in later on is if you don't just have ADS, but if you have a black hole, then you make a point of choosing particular boundary conditions at the horizon of the black hole.
Okay.
So then you
have boundary conditions, so
you have to
choose this asymptotic behavior.
In some sense, when you...
Well, it's still, what he's doing is going deep into the infrared or deep into the geometry, and here he's choosing in the Euclidean, and what I would be doing is saying that I go deep into the geometry and I find a black hole horizon, and so I choose some other boundary, or, you know, some natural or physical boundary conditions there, and that will lead me to slightly, but it's a different geometry. What he's studying right now is a
right.
And actually, we'll find new, okay, we'll find different solutions. For example, here I can have plus minus kz, both of those will be valid, because then it'll also depend, okay, in which state the CFT is. So the contribution from state will come into the correlations. Yes.
You're sweeping things under the rug a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, and this idea that we require only one condition here to fix the complete solution. Okay, AK is, this will be fixed by the normalization in the, okay, here. So using FK epsilon is equal to 1 will give me K is equal to over epsilon D by 2. So only single, only one condition actually fixes the complete solution. And this is similar to the case last time Alex talked about. In various cases, we were getting, when he explained, okay, we need one or two boundary conditions. And this is also related to something called the Gram-Lee theorem, where if you have the Euclidean boundary, you can find the complete solution inside the bulk using only one independent quantity. Okay. Now, okay, we have found the solution, and now we want to find the correlation function, right? So we use the that form of the phi, knowing what we know about, knowing that fk is given by this expression, and we insert into the action. Okay, action is, okay. So yeah, that is the form of the action, but the one of the term is gone by the equation of motion, and we are left only with the boundary term. And when we insert the solution, okay, I am skipping some steps, but the idea is that here I have dk, ddk, and when we insert two of those in that boundary term, we can integrate with respect to x, because x will decouple, that will give one delta function, k1 minus k2, k1 plus k2, and from there, we'll have 1 dx, 2 integration over dk, and we'll end up with only one of the integrations. And here, f epsilon k is the, it is called momentum space flux factor. And this one has a form it's going to be related to the two-point function directly.
Yeah, but why is it a flux factor?
Okay, when you are in the space, real space, I mean, not in the momentum space, but the, then it will depend on the x, and there will be integration over area, I guess, dx, and there you will have the, this will behave like something like a flux. But now you're in momentum space, and you can call it the momentum space flux vector. But I don't know anything about it.
I mean, if you look at the expression at the top of the board, it looks kind of like a current. So I think it got inherited from those ideas.
Okay, and okay, yeah. But now we can go back to the calculation of the correlation function. And in more order space, we can do so square S at phi naught. And from there, we can directly read off okay, is it visible here? Okay, here you're taking the functional derivative. So it is actually clear in one of the intermediate step how exactly we do this. We take the derivative and then we recover this form. But it's straightforward in that particular step, but I haven't written. If you want, I can write it. Okay. Okay. And yes. And using that, okay, we somewhere derived the expression. Okay, this is the expression for Fk. We insert it here to find the expression for the flux vector. And okay, it has some weird form, but the main idea is that now we need to use the form of the Bessel function near the boundary. And that is going to give some extra terms which will become a contact terms. We need to exclude those terms. And there will be another piece which is going to be the relevant piece. And then we will show that that relevant piece gives us the correct scaling in the on the CFT side in the spatial scaling, I would say. What do you call it? So the key idea here is my flux vector will become this piece, and what we need to use is that, okay, so nu is related to k. So, no, it's not. Okay, it is just a mass square. So, this form of the solution Kx has two pieces. Okay, so the Bessel function has two pieces when we solve it near the boundary. One of the piece has following form, and this piece is going to contribute in the contact terms, which we can actually remove from the actual expression. When nu is integer, it has a logarithmic term, and when nu is not an integer, we don't have that one, but this nu is fractional. The point is that this is the piece which actually gives us the correct behavior for the in the okay. Is it fixed? Oh, okay, it is fixed actually. And using that piece, actually, we can. Okay, do you want to see how they are going to contribute in the contact term, or you're fine? Okay, so Alex wants to see. Okay, I'm stuck because I can't move this piece. So the idea is to take this form of the solution and insert in this expression and make a series expansion for small epsilon, which is the cutoff, and defined that this expression has following form. So this piece has integer powers of k, and if we take the Fourier transform, or we insert this expression in the expression for the for phi. Okay, if we take the Fourier transform of those terms, what we are going to recover is a contact term, and this can be seen in following form. Let's say if we have dtk star I kx, and we have, let's say, k square or any power, let's say 2m, this will be equivalent to, okay, this is the other box m delta x, and there will be some factors. Okay, I can have x naught. So all of the terms here with integer powers of k will become the contact terms, which we can drop, and this piece is going to give us the relevant behavior. And what we find is, if we take the leading order term here, which is this part, and do the Fourier transform, okay, I'll call it. it's a beta. What we recover is so this is the part, or this is the form of the correlation function which we wanted to see. And from there, we find it. And other terms are going to give us the subleading contribution in the correlation function. Yeah, so actually there is, and
like right now when you set epsilon to 0.
Yes, so there is some epsilon dependence, and we have to, in some sense, normalize our expression for the two-point function. From there, we actually remove the epsilon dependence. But whatever given, like in the notes or somewhere, I mean, it's not consistent. We do need to remove that epsilon dependence. So, okay, there is some epsilon.
So that's actually, that integral isn't necessarily true, but f, you know, they're like the two-point function is equal to that expression.
Okay, yeah. Here is the expression for two-point function.
Oh, okay.
So it is proportional to
right.
k. And that piece is going to be the leading order.
So if I write down f, or, you know, okay, I see. Thank
you. Okay. Okay. That's all I guess I wanted to do in this part. The main goal was to recover direct expression for the two-point function. So we can see that taking the approach, we can derive two-point function. And the only other thing that I wanted to add is that what are actually the allowed behavior for the solution of the phi in the bulk near the boundary. Okay, so so one thing we did not talk about, maybe Alex talked last time, how exactly, which solution of the phi actually we choose. So the main idea was the relevant solutions for phi were those which can be renormalized, and the condition was that the action should not be infinite. So it is a form there. So if we find a solution for phi and we insert it in that expression for action, after the integration, it should be finite. So those are the only relevant pieces. And depending on the mass, the dimension of the solution scales, we saw last time, I guess Alex discussed, what are the different regions which are allowed for the mass or dimensions of the scalar. So first of all, we are working in the, okay, this condition is only for the Euclidean metric. If we are in Minkowski space, then the condition changes. There we have a well-defined time, and the condition will become that energy which becomes d mu nu u d x, and this should be finite. Yes.
You had a square root of g in the position, in the coordinate integral, but then you go to momentum space. Are you showing the full expression?
Okay, yeah. You mean,
is there
this routine?
Yeah, I guess my question is there a momentum metric or something hidden or not?
Momentum metric? Oh, for here?
Yeah.
This is in the Euclidean, I'm using Euclidean metric for here.
Okay.
So the way this Fourier transform was defined for k and x, I was using the flat metric. But as a Ross asked, there are some factors of epsilon which you need to take care of in the end. And that is related to the renormalization of the two-point function. You need to separate them in the end. Okay, but coming back to the imaginary time, what we can do is we want to see what is the asymptotic behavior, or the how does this action behave, what is the leading order divergence, if it is divergent or it is finite, when we approach the boundary. So we want to find when z goes to epsilon, how does my action behaves? Okay, so if we assume that phi goes like z raised to power delta near the boundary, we pick the leading order term in the action, and which turns out to be one of the term in the first, So this is the form of the leading order term near the boundary in the action, and this piece will imply that this quadrant should be negative, no, positive. If as epsilon goes to zero, this should be finite. So this piece will die turning zero, so L is zero. And this is actually consistent with, yeah, so this translated into the mass, this will give you the BF form. But,
so just a,
yeah.
So what you're doing is you're saying, let's just say phi goes as some z to the delta, and we're not going to specify which delta it is. Not delta plus delta minus right now. That's
yes.
Just a number.
Yes.
And then you're evaluating the bulk action, which we didn't really see, but it's something like del phi
okay.
squared plus
yeah.
m squared.
We can only evaluate the boundary term, which is fine, and we get.
Okay, so you want to think of this as the boundary term?
Yep. You can take the boundary term there, and this will produce this expression.
So. If you're taking the boundary term, why is there an integral over z?
Okay, so if I take the bulk, I'll get this result, but if I drop the integration and just use the boundary term, I'll get the same expression, but there
yeah.
won't be any integration over z.
Yeah. But, okay.
Yeah, so what is the question?
Given that there's an integral over z, perhaps conceptually I might want to think of that
okay.
as the integral of the action that you never really wrote down, but it's something like del phi squared plus m squared phi squared. And
yeah.
and as you approach z goes to zero, this is the behavior that you get. With the two delta coming from the phi squared and the minus d minus one coming from the square root of d.
Yes.
And, okay.
Sorry. Why can't I just think of this different? It's like I'm integrating over z, and that's going to diverge. Instead of saying I'm not going to keep all the solutions that have delta to the low and diverges, what if I just introduce a cutoff in z and have that?
What do you want? You mean why do you say that these are the only, this is the condition we want? It goes for the normalizable solution. And I guess you are saying why this condition should be there?
No, I'm saying so you have this action at the bottom, which is an integral over z or something.
Yes.
So if I think of that on the field theory side, I'm integrating over energy modes, and I find a UV divergence, or whatever this ends up being. But then the solution here, instead of saying we're going to put some cutoff, is that we say we're going to look at different solutions.
Okay, I'm not getting that question.
I'm not exactly sure how they, I mean, this is coming from Witten and Clever.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how they motivated it, but I would worry if I just said I'll let delta be whatever I want and I'll stick in an artificial cutoff, is that whatever calculations I do, or if it's divergent, are going to be dependent on that cutoff so that I'm not, I've regulated the theory, but I'm going to find infinities as my answers when I do whatever calculations.
But is it clear that the cutoff's going to stay with us? Make sure we have to calculate something that won't depend on something.
I'm not presenting an argument. I'm just presenting an intuition, but.
So on that same note, why are we demanding that the action be finite? Is there like a deep reason?
Okay, one of the argument I can give, but it's not very. The cutoff dependent terms actually depend on what phase or what are the, okay, in what phase the theory is, or is in what state the theory is, but in some sense here, this cutoff independent term, in some sense going to contribute, it's going to come only from the theory. It will be independent of the phase, different phases of the CFT. So my intuition is that, I mean, they wanted to pick that kind of term for contribution, which is independent of the state of the boundary CFT. This is also just an intuition, but. And the idea is, this piece actually gives you the, I guess this is, you know, this is exactly the BF bound here, but above that BF bound, we can get more sensible solutions, or still there are some other solutions where pieces of solution we can find by choosing a new CFT where we actually subtract that boundary term and yeah, and in some sense the CFT is sourced and we find new behavior for the delta. The new bound for the delta, I would say.
Are you going to show us that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Sorry, did you say why, you know, that's a lower bound on delta, but did the CFT tell you that wasn't good enough? Was there a reason they suspected that you ought to be able to do something else from a distant perspective?
I think, I mean, the only idea is that, I mean, if we stay in this regime, we have only one condition fixes a solution.
Okay.
But they consider another CFT, which has actually same dual gravity, but there, instead of just needing one condition, you need two conditions to fix that solution, because in some sense, these two pieces are relevant.
But I'll just add, so what you're saying is I can do ADS-CFT and study operators that have delta greater than D over 2. But it, just from the perspective of CFTs, people have studied them and studied correlators, and they find bounds on allowed weights.
Okay, I'm not sure exactly.
So just from the perspective of CFT, there are also rules that the weight of, say, a scalar quasi-primary or whatever can't become arbitrarily small.
Okay.
And there are, if you look at it carefully, there are well-defined bounds. But it turns out that the bound in D dimensions is not D over 2, but rather D over 2 minus 1.
Okay. So you're, I guess, you're saying that this solution actually violates the unitarity bound and you bring it back, is what it is?
No, what I'm saying is that the ADS, so conformal field theories, just analysis of conformal field theories suggests that allowed operators have a certain range. And so far what we found is that our knowledge or manipulating ADS-CFT in this way doesn't let us cover that full range.
Okay.
And so they were motivated to ask, well, what else can I do so that I can cover that little window that hadn't been covered yet.
Okay. I wasn't editing out that much. So Witten and Klebanov actually found that window, and the idea was to subtract the boundary action.
Can I have a question about this bound? So the identity is an operator that has dimension 1. Is there an identity there, or?
Other than 1.
dimension of it.
In some sense, that's trivial. Right.
But it seems like the identity is not allowed, or.
No, but yes. But if you look at the correlator with the identity, in some sense, it's trivial.
Yeah.
So yeah, no. So that, okay, so there's an exception to this. A good rule, then, is always an exception to this.
Okay, so Klebanov and Witten said we take the bulk action, which is okay. This is after integration by parts, but before doing that, whatever the bulk action is, and we remove this boundary term, and this will give us new CFT. It's not the same CFT. And this is sourced. And for this case, we find that if we try to figure out, similar to this case, the scaling behavior for deltas, we take z raised power l, we find that s k del u goes by. Minus t minus 2 plus 2 by some terms. And this actually makes sense because here we have the leading order term. The next leading order term comes with the z squared. So this is another. So if the leading order term, which comes from the boundary, this has been removed, the next leading order term will give us this piece. Yes.
So this might be a stupid question. So
yeah, you.
Which one exactly is this B? Like, is it the whole action or just the box?
Okay.
It's the bulk action we've never actually seen, right?
The bulk action with you.
It's if you unintegrated that by part.
Yes, only the bulk.
So that is the same thing. Right?
That is the same thing, only the bulk part.
So I mean, so the action that we have here is just the integral of box minus m squared.
Yes.
Is
exactly.
This thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
But
yeah,
phi is on shell, so why is that non zero?
It's not on shell, right? So this is only the leading term here.
But we found a solution for phi that solves our equation of motion. Is that not what we're putting here?
Okay, you're saying that we found a complete solution for phi for the equation of motion.
Yeah, well, that's
and
what we did.
There, it should be zero, right?
Yeah.
So that's a good question. I don't have an answer to it. I mean, this isn't the answer, but all you're looking at is a free field there. If you had a more complicated field theory, it wouldn't.
Okay, so that
it wouldn't vanish.
Okay, the point
the
is that I have removed the terms which contain higher phi's in it.
Yeah.
So there are other interactions. And we are, like all perturbative theories, we are just focusing on the leading piece.
But if I mean, say you add a phi cube there, and you're going to find that your action has some scaling behavior.
Yes.
But if I have a phi to the 4 over here, I imagine I'm going to get a different.
So all of those terms are going to be at lower order. So when I say my phi has ZL, it also has complete solution will have plus 2 and so on. And this section or this form of the phi inserted there will give you the terms on the boundary which will be of the form 2 delta minus d some stuff and then delta minus d plus 2, some stuff, and so on. And the idea is to remove this part, and you end up with this.
I'm not happy, but that's okay. I'll trust it.
I guess, I mean, the whole idea was to find the CFT which will actually cover that narrow window which was not covered by the. This gives the correct form for this one.
We've added a source, this button over here. How is that interpreted in the CFT? Like we've added a boundary term, some sort of like this.
Yes.
What changed other than like the result? Like what's different about the CFT?
Yeah, so it's a very good question actually. So in that case, the idea was that whenever we solve the file and we find two solutions, if you remember from last discussion, the file turns out to be del minus some term, and then there was okay, some coefficient A, there was B, and del plus. And I guess we dropped, removed this piece, and we were working only with this point.
Right.
And there was only one condition which was fixing this constant.
Right.
This was zero, but for this case or in this narrow region, what will happen? This will also be non-zero, so it will also contribute. And this piece is going to be related to the source which we are putting the bound on the boundary.
Well, it is like a source on the boundary.
Yes, precisely.
So, but like, let's say I want to make up some dual theory to a CFT. What is adding a term like this going to do?
So it is like putting extra source in the CFT.
Okay.
But I think you're saying you're going to go through the same process, but you're going to call that your action now. And so when you what he argued there is when you evaluate the action, you get a different answer. But if we go back to step one, we're going to say now our action is essentially. Well, for free fields, I guess what Alex is saying, it's not particularly interesting. But in principle, there could be lots of other phi cubed or whatever terms. But I would take that as my action, and I'd drop what he, I mean, what he did is he subtracted off that boundary term. And then he's saying you would go through the same kind of procedure, but, well, there was a story that, I guess AK is like my source. That, or where's the phi naught? No, that one got erased.
So, okay, so this FK is related to the phi.
But over here, you were saying, in general, there's some expansion. The solution has some expansion. There are two independent solutions, which each has a different an independent coefficient. And you chose one, I guess it was in general, you would choose V to be your sort of phi naught. And so that was the thing, implicitly, that was the thing that he was varying to get Green's function or correlator somewhere, but now he's saying that, well, no, in this particular theory with that new boundary term and in this particular small window allowed masses, I can choose A, and A will be my source. A will play the role of finite. And so the correlators that you get are correlators with of operators with a different weight than what I had before. So it's a different CFT.
Right. So, I just wanted to add. So here I'm choosing a different basis for the solution. So we can choose different basis for the solution of the basic function.
Yeah.
So if we choose, if we would have chosen a different basis and we would have looked at the boundary terms or the behavior in the boundary, it's going to be something like that. And there again, we'll have two coefficients we wanted to fit.
Right. Like, yeah, see how it fits your solution. Yeah, I just don't like the dictionary. What does that mean? Like, what does a new boundary theorem mean? But I guess, yeah, it's a completely different CFT now.
It's a different theory. It's like saying, I mean, you might have asked the question, you know, if I add a phi cube term in the bulk, what does that mean? Well, it's going to modify the correlators in the CFT, so you're defining a new CFT.
Right.
If I add a phi cube term, I'm not changing the weight of the operators, but you're certainly changing what the correlators will be. Like if it's just a free field theory, then, well, the two-point function is the only connected thing. You add phi cube, you start to see more interesting connected correlators. Here you're doing something that looks a little more exotic, and in fact, it produces a more dramatic result. You end up with correlators of operators with a completely different weight, even though the bulk part of the action didn't look like it changed.
But I guess just, I won't worry about it. Like, you want to know which CFT you're talking about, like, so I want to know what's different between these two CFTs, like to put this duality to use, right? What do you want?
Right, but well, it would have either been derived from somewhere, and you would see that you know this is the choice I should make to correspond because I know that I have an operator in the dual theory of this kind, or you can do it sort of from the bottom up, and I'm saying I want to build an ADS gravity theory that talks about operators with this weight,
and then you see that,
and if they're in this range between d over 2 and d minus. D over 2 minus 1.
Sort of a bottom up way to get the right unitary bound.
Well, it applies in either approach. You might know that the operator has a certain weight, or if you're just interested in CFTs with operators of that weight, then you would know you'd have to use this prescription.
But, well, continuing with that question. It seems like the new CFT is more general than the previous one. Like the previous one is included in the new one. Is it true? Because if the only thing that characterizes the previous CFT is the BF this bound, in the other one is more less restricted.
So we didn't look at the mass. So So I don't have a succinct answer for you, but it's really only. You would only use this approach when delta is between d over 2 and this d over 2 minus 1.
Okay.
Yes, that was the
end. Okay. But that's an opportunity then to make some announcements. The first most exciting announcement is that we won't have a lecture on December 15th. So there'll be one this Thursday and next Monday, and then we'll call it quits for this term. We'll start again January 9th.
January 9th.
Okay.